This is Rocky Mountain Voices. You're listening to the vSpring V100 show, powered by PodTech.
There was a quote a number of years ago about Silicon Valley being in the business of developing businesses. And I don't know that Utah is ever going to become Silicon Valley, but certainly we're on the map.
Welcome to the V100 show. My name is Dennis Wood. The V100 is a group of community-nominated and peer-selected entrepreneurs who have been voted most likely to experience successful venture returns in the state in the next 5 to 7 years. I'm here with Jack Sunderlidge, who is the CEO of Content Watch. Jack, welcome to the show.
Dennis, thank you. It's good to be with you.
I'm glad you could be here. Jack, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing at Content Watch right now.
Well, Dennis, we're very excited about Content Watch. This is a small company based here in Salt Lake City, and we're about protecting families and homes. We do internet filtering of content that could range anywhere from pornography to hate violence to online gambling. And it's a company that feels like it has a mission, but we're finding that there's great need out there in the world, and we begin to expand that company into the business sector as well in terms of not only protecting individuals, but also enhancing the productivity of those companies.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
I've had a long career in the IT industry that began a number of years ago with a company called Burroughs Corporation, which most people would recognize today as Unisys. And during that time, went over the evolution in the IT industry from mainframe computing to mini computers to client-server, PC-based to web-based computing. So it's been an interesting industry to be associated with. I began with Burroughs Corporation back in Des Moines, Iowa, in the sales capacity, and then progressed through a number of assignments there, and was in the corporate headquarters at the time was Detroit, Michigan, as marketing director in our financial industry marketing group. And at that time, pretty well determined that I was better suited to be a field manager than probably a home office guy. And made a request to come back out into field management. And so came to Salt Lake City about 21 years ago as district manager for Burroughs. Shortly after that, the merger occurred with Sperry to form Unisys, and I made a move over to Digital Equipment, which was a high-growth company at the time in the mini-computer field. And we had some good experiences there as district manager, was promoted to the position of vice president of corporate accounts for the Western U.S. The company was good enough to allow me to stay in Salt Lake, which was important to me and my family. And then Digital was acquired by Compaq Computer. We had some good people on our teams, and we were fortunate to put some good numbers up for the company. So I was given the opportunity to be the vice president of global accounts for the West. And a few years after that, Hewlett-Packard acquired Compaq. I was offered a position to do pretty much what I'd been doing, but was thinking I was perhaps 2 years away from retirement, and there was an opportunity to take advantage of an early retirement package, which was a good fit for me. So I took an early retirement in about 2002, then spent some time working with the creation of these new high-tech high schools, early college high schools in the state, and was on the board of directors at Content Watch during that time. And the company asked if I would consider being CEO of the company. I tried to explain to them that I was no longer full-time, but the more we talked about it, it seemed to align with some other things that I was involved with in the community. And so ended up coming online in March 2005 with Content Watch.
You know, Jack, you, at least as long as I've been in the state, you seem to have been somebody who has been heavily involved at the state level, also with associations in the state and driving kind of the technology agenda here in the state. And you certainly, especially going back to your days at Burrow, I mean, you have had some visibility into the evolution of technology in Utah. Just take a moment, tell us a little bit about what you have seen in terms of technology's evolution in the state and maybe what you see for the state in the next, 5 to 10 years from now.
It's been interesting to watch that, Dennis. We started UITA, the Utah Information Technology Association, in 1991. Peter General came in and created that organization. I was fortunate to be on the ground floor, was with Digital Equipment at that time. We became one of the founding sponsors, and we saw that there was a lot of potential for the IT industry within the state of Utah. But I think as we looked at a lot of the smaller companies, there were people with great ideas around technology and be able to bring some good product to market, but they probably weren't very sophisticated in developing business plans. The investment community wasn't very active at that time. And so we saw a lot of good potential in the state, but it's been nice to watch it over the last 15 years. evolved the way that it has. I think UETA, now the Utah Technology Council, has played a nice role in helping educate people, networking, things like peer-to-peer forums for CEOs, mm-hmm. peer-to-peer forums for CIOs, and so on, have helped people develop one another. And, of course, today that's probably the premier organization in the state for the not only information technology but life sciences. Okay. And I think the people that are heading up companies today have been able to either develop or attract talent from out of state. And then it's been really nice to see the VSprings and other institutional investors in the state come forward and recognize that there are some good companies with great potential here. So I remain very optimistic. I had a chance to be chairman of UETA, and it was nice to see us be able to attract people to come into the state and be part of this with us. People like Kevin Rollins, CEO of Dell Computer, Mark Hurd, CEO of Hewlett-Packard, recently Steve Ballmer coming in from Microsoft. I mean, these are names that we all recognize and admire. We have the annual meeting coming up soon, and Shane Robinson, who is a Utah product chief technology officer for HP, is coming in to be the keynote there. So
And also a Hall of Famer as well.
He was inducted about 4 years ago. That's right. Thanks for remembering that. Yeah. And Shane really has a place in his heart for Utah and comes back often, maintains a home here. And so it's just been really good to see the evolution. I think there was a quote a number of years ago about Silicon Valley being in the business of developing businesses. And I don't know that Utah is ever going to become Silicon Valley, but certainly we're on the map today in terms of the strength of our industry. We talk about the 3,200 IT companies, many we recognize as being the startups that you just described, that have great potential. There will continue to be some fatality, but there are going to be more and more of these companies that are becoming successful and growing right here in the state. And I think we're doing some things within the state and the government to really nurture those kinds of things in getting the VC community, the consultants, the accountants, the cross-educating of the executives within the industry as well. So it's just a very healthy environment.
You've obviously been active with UTC, but also you have a hand in the USTAR initiative as well as the World Trade Center initiative here in the state. So to me, these are a couple of those examples. Tell us a little bit about both USTAR and the World Trade Center.
Well, first of all, during that long career in the industry, there were times when I was vice president of Global Accounts for Compaq, I was spending a lot of time on airplanes and working with customers and our teams out of state. And so I didn't feel like I was doing as much as I would like to have been doing in the community. When I took the early retirement and wasn't traveling nearly as much, I saw the chance to really be more involved. And let me start with the World Trade Center. A couple of years ago, I was working on Governor Huntsman's Economic Development Policy Committee, and we had actually formed a task force before that just to take a look at what it would take to do more international trade here in the state of Utah. And as a result, we had a consultant by the name of Paul Nelson that was doing a study along with us. And Paul and I went over to Geneva, Switzerland, and met with the World Trade Center Association and their General Assembly. And at that time, we determined that there were 287 World Trade Centers worldwide. There were 58 of them in the United States. And we thought this could be really a good thing for Utah. And as we attended some of the meetings with those North America breakout sessions, we could see that some of those World Trade Centers had established best practices in terms of executive education, both inbound and outbound. They had translation services. They had foreign language services. I think the thing that jumped out at me was that we have a lot of companies that want to do business internationally. And my experience with Digital Compaq was that we had international organizations that really trained us and enabled us to go over and do business that way. The small companies in Utah have probably not a lot of insight into what it's like to be doing business in China versus Israel versus Denmark. And so I think to the extent that we can help people understand how business is done culturally and how you go to market there, that the World Trade Center can be a real asset to them. Conversely, if you're establishing trade missions and China is looking to bring a trade mission to the United States, and they're working through their World Trade Centers over there, and they have multiple World Trade Centers, and just parenthetically, they're going to be opening up 40 more World Trade Centers in the next 5 years in China alone. Mm. so you get a sense of the role of this.
Yeah.
So as they're planning trips to the United States, so they would look at Denver, they'd look at San Diego and say, those are World Trade Centers, let's go there. Utah, for all practical purposes, was really not on the map. And so our design here is to develop one-stop shopping. It would be our intent to have our World Trade Center office, the U.S. Department of Commerce, Utah Department of Commerce, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, International Trade, Chamber of Commerce, a number of these entities we'd have at one location, and maybe they would be housed in 150 to 200,000 square feet of a world-class building, and then we'd have other tenants that would be at the building itself. So we've had good interest on the part of the developers wanting to put up a building like this, but we think that we're well positioned to put Utah on the map. Governor Huntsman's been very supportive. We have a strong board of directors now with a bunch of names that you would recognize in the community, and we just think we're positioned to take international trade to the next level with it. I will say also that we've just brought in a fellow by the name of Lou Kramer as our president and CEO of the World Trade Center Utah, and Lou has a wealth of experience in international trade in Washington, D.C. Had actually worked with Governor Huntsman and President Mike Young from the University of Utah when they were both in the U.S. Department of Commerce and doing international trade. Yeah. So I think you can see I'm pretty enthused about the potential that we have here.
Well, it's a great project, especially as the world flattens more and more. It puts Utah on a level field, I think, with other regions. And we certainly have great raw materials, and it's great to see things like this that can facilitate this international trade. It's excellent.
Exactly. And we do tout the high innovation that occurs here and the entrepreneurial spirit, which leads me into the other thing that I have been involved with, and that's the USTAR, the Utah Science, Technology, and Research Initiative. It took us a couple of years working with the legislature to say this really is legitimate economic development. But I think having the, at the time, UEDA, Utah Life Sciences, the Economic Development Corporation of Utah, and the Chamber of Commerce all coming to the legislature together as a united front from the business community saying this is extremely important to the state. If we look around in other states, there is a lot of this kind of research and development being done. Between the University of Utah, Utah State University, they've been attracting about $500 million a year in federal grants. And as we look at how much the federal government is appropriating for that, Utah's fair share of that should be something north of $1 billion. And our objective with USTAR is to attract 50 leading research teams into the state. And we'll be working with the University of Utah, Utah State University, to create facilities and infrastructure that would make it attractive to these leading researchers. If they come into the state of Utah, they bring with them a lot of research grants, which is what our objective is, to get more of that money coming in. But the real vision of USTAR is to create these companies. We want to take this research, commercialize the product, and I think the state's doing a lot better today at technology commercialization. But and the numbers are somewhat fresh in my mind, sitting on the governing authority right now. But over the next 30 years, our objective is to create in excess of 400 companies and create about 123,000 high-paying jobs.
Wow.
And so we think that we have a good chance to be successful at that. You and I won't be here to measure our success 30 years from now, but I think early indications are that we're making some great progress and beginning to attract these researchers today.
Jack, if you could do anything else with your time, other than what you're doing right now, what would you spend your time doing?
As I think on that, Dennis, I believe with the years of experience that I have, I've probably developed a pretty good repertoire of war stories where we've been successful. I'd like to think that some of those are relevant for young people today.
So. For sure.
One of the things that I believe I would enjoy doing was going out and doing more guest lecturing in classes with the colleges and universities, and I've had the opportunity to do some of that, and you can see that the students really do have a thirst for real-world experiences. And so one of them I like to relate is when we were negotiating a contract with Intel. I was with Compaq at the time, and they were one of our global accounts in the West. And that we had been selected as their vendor, and it was a $300 million contract over 3 years, so it was pretty substantial. And as we came to the table with Intel, they had six of their people and two attorneys at each end of the table recording every word that we were stating and making sure that they understood the terms. And they opened the meeting by saying to us, "We've selected you, but we do have the second vendor out here on the sidelines. And if negotiations break down, then we'll be inviting them to the table. You will not be invited to come back.
Wow.
And so they were very astute in learning how to position us.
Yes.
And they also had a thing called the should-cost model, because they were selling us the chips that we put into our product, so they already knew what some of our costs were. So they were suggesting that here's the price that we think you ought to be offering the product for us, too. So wow. That was setting the stage for some negotiations. We were on for 2.5 days, 2 hours on, an hour off, 2 hours on, an hour off. And after 2.5 days, we were down to, and bear in mind, this is a $300 million contract. And we had a $100,000 problem over in Tel Aviv, Israel. And the lead negotiator for Intel turned to me and said, I can't believe you're going to put at risk this $300 million contract for this $100,000 problem. I said, Brad, give me 10 minutes. We adjourned the meeting. I went out, made the phone call and said, we're going to do the deal, services, and if we have to subsidize your concerns on services there, we'll do it with some of the product margin, but we're this close. We're going to do the deal. And so we came back in, and 15 minutes later, we had a handshake.
The deal was done.
And it was done.
Wow.
I took some pride in that because we had a great team of people that brought it together, and it was very intense. But I think it spoke to the competitiveness, the professionalism, the integrity of our team, and so on. And so I would enjoy going out, being able to relate stories like that and others to young people who are looking to build careers in sales and marketing. And so I said, I'll try and separate the war stories from the relevant experiences, but
great story.
I think I would enjoy doing that.
Great story. I think you'd be incredibly effective at instructing.
Thank you.
Well, Jack, thank you for joining us today at the V100 Show.
Dennis, it's been my pleasure.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.